Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears, along with you for the ride today, Tuesday, October the 12th, 2021, and that warm weather is going to stick around for about five more days, so enjoy it while it lasts here in the autumn of 2021. 16 minutes past the hour here, and we have got a big program for you this morning. So much going on in the city of Marion right now that to inform and educate you, the citizens, from a first-hand perspective, we have dedicated the entire 2 hours this morning to all topics going on in the city. Now, in hour number two this morning, from 9:10 until 10 a.m., we will have a special interview, an exclusive interview with Mayor Scott Schertzer. The mayor usually comes on the last Tuesday of the month, but there was such news and such information last week that he has agreed to come on this morning and hopefully sort it all out for us from his perspective. And the same can go for our first guest this morning, First Ward City Councilman Kai Mead. Now, before we go to Kai, I just want to let people know that the news is out this morning that the League of Women Voters has canceled again their candidates' night. That will not be happening. The press release came out this morning. But as like last year, we will be having our decision 2021 here at WWGH Radio on Thursday night, October the 28th, from 7:15 p.m. until 9 p.m., and it will pretty much run like we did it last year. I will be here moderating along with Mitch Hooper from the Marion Star. We will also be asking questions of the candidates, but you can get in on this starting at 7 p.m. on October 28th. You can dial the number 740-383-9944 and ask any of the candidates any question you'd like. You'll get an operator, and that index card will be passed along to myself, and we will ask that question over the air as time allows in that two-hour period. Thursday night, October 28th. So that's the news on that this morning. And remember, all city council seats are up for grabs this year. The two uncontested seats are City Council President Todd Schneider and Jason Schauber's seat. All the rest are contested, and every candidate will be invited to that event. So we look forward to that. Had a lot of fun with that last year, and hopefully got some information across as the league makes a decision in regard to COVID not to have their event for the second year in a row. Thursday night, October the 28th, 7:15 till 9 p.m. Don't miss it. And now we turn to First Ward City Councilman Kai Mead. Kai, big event coming up October 28th. I'm sure you'll be here for that.
Oh, absolutely. I love a good love to hear from voters.
Well, it'll be interesting this year because every seat is open except the presidency of City Council and Jason Schauber's seat. And there are some highly contested races this year, it seems.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of races that, to be honest, I think are going to be a flip of a coin on how they go one way or the other. And it's difficult to read because, you know, with coming out of a pandemic or in the situation we're in, voting habits have changed. So it's difficult to tell. 2 years ago, you could kind of look at early voting for a hint one way or the other. But this time around, I don't feel comfortable being able to tell how anything's going to go until we get the results.
Well, in this event this year, because I believe Election Day is Tuesday, November the 2nd, will be 5 days before the event. So I think people will hear from the candidates. I don't believe there are any other forums scheduled this year because of COVID and things of that nature. So 5 days before, people will get to ask what they want to ask before they go and vote. And I think there probably will be a lot more in-person voting this year because of, not because COVID's any less dangerous, but because of the vaccinations out there.
Yeah, and it really just depends. At one point, you kind of got a mixed bag of who voted early, and then during the pandemic, it was one party more than the other. And so now, no one kind of knows how it's going to go. Maybe you see one party do really well for early vote, and then the other surges and on election day. So I think that it's not going to be over until it's over.
Well, a lot to go through here this morning involving a myriad of topics. Let's start with this. There was a city council meeting last night. What happened?
You know, we talked about a lot of things. We talked about the ARPA investment package that I've put forward. We talked about the current situation with the auditor. You know, it was a lengthy discussion about both topics. And I think we got out at, like, gosh, 9, something like that.
6:30 to 9.
Yeah, so it was a long one.
So what was the big drawn-out issues last night that caused that?
Well, I think anytime we're talking about spending grant money, people have, you know, will critique things, and people will say, well, I think we should spend the money on this, and I think we should spend the money on that, and I don't know if I want to spend on this. For instance, one of the things that I'm really passionate about getting in is movable speed humps throughout the city. I'm not saying we put them on every dang street, but I think that it would be beneficial and help police officers do their job so they can spend more time on going after, you know, drug houses and things like that. I've worked with the police chief on this project, and that's one of the big issues for me. And at the same time, I've gone to council members, Democrat and Republican, and said, look, what do you want to pass this bill? Like, what... We've all been on here. I think the newest council member has been on here for like a year and a half. So we've talked to our voters. What are the voters telling you that you want? Let's get this passed. I'm not trying to pass a partisan bill one way or the other. I'm trying to do what's best for the city of Marion. And that's why there's things in there that I think both parties can agree on. We're talking about tearing down fire-damaged homes, blighted structures. We're talking about giving our firefighters necessary resources. And so if a council member, Republican or Democrat, comes to me and says, you know, look, here's what I want, here's what I think that the constituents need in my ward, I'm all ears. Let's get this thing passed.
Why can't we get this thing passed? Why is there such a discussion about it?
Well, I think that it's a healthy discussion, and it's going to go 3 readings to where we're going to need 4 or 5 votes to get the thing passed.
Do you think you have those votes?
I feel good. I feel cautiously good. I never, again, it's kind of like election day. I don't want to count any chickens before they're hatched one way or the other. But at the same time, I think that, you know, if I've put forward, I think, a fair deal towards every council member, and I've said, hey, what issue matters to you? What's your big thing in the ward? Let's add it in. I don't care if you're a Republican or a Democrat. I think every council member should have something. I mean, if we're not listening to constituents, if I can't come to you and say, hey, if you had $100,000 to spend in your ward, what would you spend it on? If you got nothing for me, then what have you been doing?
Well, here's my question. How much ARPA money did we get?
We got $1.8 million, and that's just the first round. The second round we got is going to be another $1.8
million. $1.8
million.
How many council members have put forth any ideas on how to spend any of this?
As of right now, I'm the only one. I have worked with a few council members on putting together ideas. Like, for instance, I worked with our safety director and the second ward councilman, Ayers Ratliff, on the tree program. I've been super involved with Kathy Swanger in the 6th ward about how what's the best way to go after tearing down some of these homes one way or the other. So this is not Kai me doing this by himself. I mean, I've gotten council members involved. I've talked to our engineers about some of these programs. I've talked to our safety forces about these programs to make sure that they're okay with it as well.
So at this point, why do you think more council men, or what do you call council people now?
That works for me.
Yeah, people on council have not put forth any ideas in regard to their own packages for such a large amount of money that they knew was coming.
Well, you know, I think that, I don't have an answer for that one way or the other, I guess, but I think that I'm just as focused as possible on making sure that this money goes into tangible solutions for either our first responders or the people that live in Marion City. And so, you know, if I have to defend the bill, to the death, I will, because I think it's the best thing for the city of Marion. I mean, we're talking about improving parks, again, getting first responders resources they need, tearing down some of these blighted homes, addressing speeding, and so you know what? I would rather be the guy that votes yes on those things than the person that, you know, that just sits on it and says, and says, you know, this is a problem. You know, we need to do something about flooding in the city. We need to do something about speeding in the city. And then when somebody hands you a check and says, hey, address these issues, we fumble, we bumble, and we don't do anything about it.
What's the price tag on your package?
It's $850,000 right now. It's all money that would either get freed up from ARPA spending or just directly related to ARPA. So again, this is a package that could be expanded, decreased. I'm willing to negotiate on just about every facet, maybe minus the speed humps, to get this thing across the aisle. I'm not being partisan. I'm not picking sides one way or the other. We can make it bigger. We can make it smaller. Let's just get this thing done.
You said something interesting there, across the aisle. And the mayor and I had a conversation on air. I don't remember if it was last month or the month before, but on how almost everything going through city council, especially things like this, the ARPA money, is going down party lines. Why is that?
You know, I think that as we get closer to an election, people kind of huddle back into their groups for security, for all kinds of reasons. And so all of a sudden, the only people in your ear are the partisan, are some partisan people, and they tell you, you know, you can't work with Republicans, or you can't work with Democrats, or sometimes independents. And so that, I think, contributes to it. But at the same time, I guess I have faith that it has to be more valuable to a council member to say, here is a tangible solution to a ward your constituents are facing, than to say, to just go back and say, you know, oh, I'm a Democrat, you know, and I gave those Republicans crap, or I'm a Republican, you know, I didn't work with those Democrats at all one way or the other. I think that it would be a sad state of affairs if I can't say, hey, fix the problem. Fix the problem that these people are telling you about. You know, here's dollars that maybe it doesn't fix the problem completely, but, you know, go back to your constituents and you can say, look, this is what I got in this ARPA spending, or this ARPA investment package. If that is less valuable than just going back to the party and saying, you know, and I gave them crap, I gave them hell, then to me that would just be kind of sad.
Now, on council right now, known Democrats, we have yourself, we have Mike Thomas. Who would be listed in the Democratic column at this point? Josh Daniels. Now, see, I'm not sure about this, because Josh Daniels is now an independent. Mm-hmm. Kathy Swanger is an independent, but will be running as a Democrat.
Yeah, and I guess I would say, it's funny, because I think Kathy Swanger is probably the most independent human being I've ever met. When you think of, like, the character that you learn about in school of an independent, where, like, everything is just, like, so straight down the middle, one way or the other, it is Kathy Swanger. I've never met a more independent human being in my life. So as far as Dems go, there's Ayers, Mike Thomas, I mean, and then there's myself in the first ward, and those are really the true Dems, in my opinion. I guess you'd have to ask Swanger one way or the other, because I don't want to put words in her mouth. But those are the three that are running as Dems intentionally.
So at this point, you will need how many votes to pass this?
I need four.
Four.
Four and a four and a tiebreaker from Todd Schneider's. And
do you feel confident that the three Democrats, known Democrats, and Kathy Swanger will vote for this? That's four.
Yeah. You know, I don't want to get in anyone's head one way or the other on what their voting intention is. You know, I think that you'll see a lot of Dems vote for it one way or the other, but at the end of the day, they have to come to their own conclusions. I would just hope that if someone comes to their council member and says, hey, what problems do you face in your ward? Let's work something out. Let's get it in this ARPA spending package. That would bring a lot of people to the table one way or the other. And again, if we need to, I'm not going to only work with Democrats to pass this. I would not let this fail just because I was unwilling to work with Republicans or independents. That's not for the best of the city of Marion. So if a Republican wants to work on this, let's work on it. Let's get it passed.
Do you feel confident in the tie-breaking vote of Todd Schneider?
I feel good about. I think Todd has the best interest of constituents, best interest of the citizens of Marion. So I feel good about his tie-breaking vote. I think that at the end of the day, he would vote for it. and from discussions with him, I think that we share a lot of the same policy goals. You know, we have to be able to put something forward as legislators to say, you know, we passed something that solves the problem that people face. You know, Marion runs on a pretty tight budget. We have an opportunity now to do things that, you know, 10 years ago, there's no chance. 20 years ago, there was no chance. Someone's handing you a check for $1.8 million this time and another one later on. Let's put something forward. I mean, at some point, the discussion has to stop, or at some point, we have to at least narrow down the discussion on, like, what specific issues do we have with this ARPA package? But, like, for instance, we can't keep kicking it. We can't kick it back to committee just to say, you know, let's talk about it when we're on a second reading. You're in a second reading. Let's talk about it. If you have a specific issue with it, let's talk about it now.
Well, for people who don't attend city council meetings or really get into this, is this something where you ask people, are you on board here? Do you start counting the votes? We hear about that on a national level. Do you go to Todd Schneider? Do you go to Kathy Swanger? Do you go to Mike Thomas? Do you go to Ayers Ratliff and say, can I count on you?
Well, I think you don't do that, but maybe beforehand when you're putting it together, you say, hey, look, we're getting $1.8 million in ARPA funds. What can I do? Like, where do you think the money should be put forward? And then you try to put together an ARPA investment package that is reflective of all those things. And again, this is not a controversial package, in my opinion. We're talking about tearing down blighted homes. We're talking about addressing speeding, getting more money to our police, more money to our fire. There's nothing on here where you say, oh, that's a Democrat thing or that's a Republican thing. It's a pretty moderate spending.
And that is that for now, because we're on limited time here, and we'll have to have you back for 2 hours one morning. But the other issue, if you pick up the Marion Star today, there it is again. It's another story in regard to the auditor, and Councilman Josh Daniels pretty much is the focus of this article. And I do want to thank Mitch Hooper from the Marion Star, who did give us credit for the Josh Daniels interview, so I appreciate that, Mitch, in regard to that. And it's a great article, to be honest with you. Mitch wrote a great article today, so if you check that out online or you get the hard copy edition, it's a great article, no matter how you feel about this issue. But we've got to go through this. And in some ways, it's unfortunate that we do. The last week has been bizarre, is how the audience is, my audience, is taking it. Now, before we get into the particulars here, how would you define the last week? The last 7 days in Marion, in politics, in regard to the auditor, and getting the books right in this city, what's the adjective you would best use?
Oh gosh, I don't. It's been a whirlwind. There's just been a lot of things happening, I think, all at once in regards to that office, in regards to interactions the office has had with council members, one way or another. I mean, you 2 weeks ago, I didn't think that a council member was going to have a police report filed against them.
Well, let's talk facts here, so we can, and we're going to try to lay this out in a timeline of the last 7 days. Now, last Monday at City Council, the backstory on this, if people don't understand, is that there was talk from the state auditors that the books for the city of Marion for 2020 have not been reconciled. To that fact, there was a special meeting held, I believe, on September 7th, where this was talked about for 2 hours. Now, a deputy auditor, Martin Watts, was present at that meeting. City Auditor Robert Landon has not been present because of a battle with COVID. So, September 30th was given as this date for a lot of reasons. September 30th was given as a big date because it was the date that Martin Watts, I believe, told the Marion Star that he thought he could have the books reconciled by. I believe it was a date given at one point by the mayor and by... I'm going to say by the mayor. I know he did say this date, that he thought if the books were not reconciled by September 30th, that there's some federal paperwork that needs to be filed that has to have those books, that will somewhere in the neighborhood fund $2.5 million in the budget of the city of Marion. Marion Area Transit falls in that, the senior center, and some police and fire officers. So September 30th came last week, and I talked to the mayor just via email, and he had said that to his knowledge, nothing had been done. This would have been the week before, Thursday before. So then comes last week's city council meeting. Martin Watts is there. Now, this would have been October the 4th, I believe, last Monday, a week ago, yesterday?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So October the 4th, city council comes up. We're 4 days past the deadline that everybody had given. Was Martin Watts asked if the books were reconciled?
Yes, and he said no.
Okay, on Monday he says no. Okay, so we go on from there, and then comes Wednesday. And then I wanted to have the paperwork here in my hand, which I do, so I don't misquote anybody. On Wednesday, all of us in the media, and it's dated here, October the 6th, got a press release. And I believe people on council probably saw this. It says, contrary to the information and statements that have been made concerning the responsibilities of my office, I wanted to take the opportunity to, in fact, let you know what exactly is the truth, not the false statements some have made. My office has met our deadline that is required of us to maintain our bonds. The report we submitted is referred to as the annual information filing. This was completed in a timely manner. Further, my office has submitted all information to the state auditors in reference to the reconciliation of our finances. This was Wednesday, 2 days after Martin Watts said the books were not reconciled. When you read this, what'd you think?
You know, I guess what concerns me is, I guess you're getting two different statements from the same office, and I tend to lean towards the guy that's there. And I hope Robert, I hope Robert gets better. I hope Robert continues to improve in his health. But my gut is to go with the guy that's there doing the work on his opinion on how, you know, where things are one way or the other. And I think that there's a little bit of wordplay in the statement as to say, you know, books are, we've turned in information to the state auditor. We've turned in reconciled books to the state auditor. Because I guess for further clarification on my end, Martin Watts' statement is that the books are not reconciled in the way that the state auditors would like them to be.
Well, now see, this is where this gets tricky, because in this statement, now this is just the statement, and we're going to move on to the Star interview here in a second, because there were further inferences made in that, or statements, however you want to refer to them. But he says here, my office has submitted all information to the state auditors in reference to the reconciliation of our finances. Not what we have, not what we can do. We've submitted all information.
Yeah, and I think it's important to understand for context that when a press release like this goes out, this is how council learns about it too. It's not like there's an email that goes out when anything gets turned in one way or the other. Council is kind of in the dark, except for what the auditor's office tells us. And so, you know, at the very least, we're in a position to where we're hearing two different statements out of the same office, one way or the other. It's not a member of council saying that the books aren't reconciled. It's the deputy auditor, and it's the deputy auditor that's kind of running the ship right now.
Okay, October the 4th, city council meeting, Martin Watts, the deputy auditor, said no, the books are not reconciled. Wednesday, October the 6th, the auditor releases this statement, Robert Landon, saying they are. Last night, October the 10th, I guess as it were, was Martin Watts at the meeting?
Yes.
Was he asked if the books are reconciled?
Yes, and he said the same thing, the books are not reconciled to the pleasure of the state auditor. And I think it's important to, I guess, where you see the similarity there is you could have turned in books that are done, you know, completely wrong and say, hey, look, I turned them in. If the state's telling you no, you're wrong. It's not, you know, a difference of opinion that where it's like, oh, you know, we'll have to agree to disagree. I think the best analogy, a best comparison, I guess, for it is say you have a paper that you're turning into your teacher that no matter how you fight, you squirm, you negotiate, they're the final person that says what your grade is. And so if they come back and they say, you know, this isn't right, you have to do it this way, you can say, no, I turned it in, all you want, but it doesn't matter. Like, you have to do it the way that they're telling you you have to do it.
So, the truth, though, of this matter is, as of this morning, October the 12th, the books are not reconciled.
That's from, that is what Martin Watts, the deputy auditor for the city of Marion, has said. And let me provide some further context as to, you know, why should the city care? We know why the city should care, because of the grants and things like that, the grade the city could get.
Well, by the way, before you go into this, because this has turned into a big question as well, we pretty much were told September the 30th. I think the auditor, his idea was September the 30th. September the 30th has came and went. Mm-hmm. Is this money in danger? $2.5 million, Marion Area Transit, the Senior Center, and Police and Fire.
I don't know. I mean, we've heard nothing from the office, one way or the other. And I think that, and further, where it starts to rock the boat a little bit more, is with, say, this ARPA package. You know, some council members might say, you know, I want to know where our books are at before we think about long-term grant spending or anything like that. You know, we've got this money now, but what's next year going to look like one way or the other? And so it kind of does have an outreaching effect. And again, like I said, my main priority is to get this bill passed. And so anything that stands in the way of that is frustrating on my end.
Auditor Robert Landon did an interview with the Marion Star that I believe aired in Friday's put out in Friday's edition. Now, there are four points that I'm going to pick out of there that I need you to speak to here, because I think this is what the audience wants to know about. In that article, Robert Landon said that the deadline for the Federal Grant Clearinghouse was met a week before its deadline. So the $2.5 million loss of money that we are talking about here is not in danger anymore. Is that true?
It's my understanding that for the Federal Grant Clearinghouse, you have to turn in a completed audit. So if your books aren't reconciled, it becomes difficult to have that completed audit. And so I think in the, and I could be wrong about this, but in the interview, he references saying, you know, we're going to get back to completing, you know, the rest of the audit. It's my understanding that through, if you just look on the federal website, it says that a full audit must be sent complete to then, you know, to have this considered done one way or the other. And, you know, that could be a misunderstanding on my end, but to me, you cannot have that done before the audit's complete. So to say that makes no sense to me one way or the other, and we've had no other information provided to us by the office.
Another statement that was made in that interview, that the books have been sent to the state and the state is backlogged due to COVID. Now, he's not saying he's backlogged due to COVID. He didn't say that in the article that I read, but that the state is backlogged due to COVID, and that's why there is no answer in regard to the submitted documents. Now, this brings up a whole confusion, because you just said that last night Martin Watts said that the books are not to the state's pleasure at this point. Well, if something was turned in and sent back, I guess I don't even understand this statement, that the books were submitted to the state, and the reason nothing has been heard back by the city of Marion is because the state is backlogged due to COVID.
Yeah, and I think from the...
Now, the state has been here. Have they ever mentioned this?
So, we heard about that probably in late spring, that they were on a bit of backlog, but it was not to the degree of, you know, this is due back into May. It wasn't to the degree that we're almost into November, and nothing's done one way or the other. And I think it's important to keep in mind that it's not the state that requested extension one. It's not the state that requested extension two. It's not the state that tried to get extension three. That was all the Marion City Auditor. And so this idea that it's all the state is just complete is just not correct in my opinion. And further, I think that if the state's telling you you're doing something wrong and you have to fix it, it almost doesn't matter what kind of backlog the state's on because the issue is on your side.
Another point that was made in the Marion Star article, that City Council did not approve a contract with an outside accounting firm on March 15th. If this had been done, there would have been no problem at all.
Yeah, and again, that's just not true. Extension 1, 2, and the attempt at 3 were all done by the Marion City Auditor, who had nothing to do with the state. And further, I mean, to come at the back end of March and to say, like, oh, I don't want the state to do it. I want someone else to do it over something at the end of the day, people were throwing their hands over the idea that, you know, this could take a month longer if we go with the state one way or the other. Well, here we are. Stuff was due at the back end of May. We're going into November. So if you felt like that was an issue, I mean, how bad must it be now? Because if the books were done correctly, if the books were done on time, we would not be in this situation. So I think it's important to kind of be able to shift through the smoke, to shift through the attempt to confuse, the attempt to make people think, oh, this is just both sides going at each other one way or the other. That's not it. I just want to make sure that Marion's money is in good hands and Marion's money is being spent in the way that it's supposed to be, and we can point to our books and say, you know, these are healthy books.
Now, the final point in the Marion Star article that I want to bring up is one of the reasons he cites as to why this has been a problem, the reconciling of the books, is that his office is short-staffed and the city council investigations into his office have slowed down this process.
And I think that in terms of staffing, this is kind of self-inflicted pain because the auditor's office was hiring people that they knew was underqualified for those jobs. And, you know, them being understaffed is kind of, again, created by themselves one way or the other. And they chose, I mean, how many months did they choose not to hire an internal revenue auditor? So I think that it's just, again, more deflection, more it's somebody else's fault, more inability to take responsibility for our inaction, for our nonfeasance, and I think that it's just...
Is there anything in that article that's true? I'm sure you've read the article.
I think that it's a lot of attempts at trying to twist words and a lot of attempts at trying to put things to confuse residents of the city of Marion. And I think that the goal isn't to provide accurate information from that article. The goal is to just throw out as many contradictory statements as possible so that the listener, the reader, doesn't know what's true and then just falls back and says, well, you know, that's just, you know, Republicans going at Democrats and Democrats going at Republicans one way or the other. There's Republicans that are on board with you know, trying to hold this office accountable and trying to make sure that we don't lose any more money than we already have.
Were you surprised when that article came out in the paper? Because I imagine a lot of people who read that Friday thought everything's fine.
Yeah, you know, I wish that there would have been a caveat in there, or at least, you know, would have gone to the state auditor. You don't even have to go to another public official in Marion if you don't want to, but at least go to the state auditor, or go to Josh Daniels, the finance chair, and talk to them about it a little bit. Or go to Deputy Auditor Martin Watts, even. Or maybe a caveat in the article that says, you know, this is a statement from someone that, you know, due to no fault of their own, has not been in the office for 2+ months.
Let's talk about that, and let's talk about Josh Daniels. Because in this statement, the third paragraph, and there were only 3 paragraphs, mentioned something that really doesn't have a whole lot to do with the audit itself. That's why we're holding it to this point. But this sparked a whole nother thing last week. But here's the third paragraph, just in the interest of transparency here on the air. This is from the October 6th memo from the office of City Auditor Robert Landon. The challenges I currently face, not only in serving the residents, but in serving my family and dealing with the effects of the COVID-19 virus, a recent comment has been made by a council member that I should be in the office instead of going to church. My recovery from this virus is directly related to advice from my doctor, as well as my church and to my God. I find it repulsive someone in city council, trusted with authority, would bring my personal faith and physical recovery into a political realm and challenge my personal medical decisions. This is the trend we see in Washington politics, and it has no business in Marion. Who's being referred to in this article, and what does are this press release? And what does this mean?
He's talking about Josh Daniels.
Okay, what did he say?
Josh Daniels said that if you can go to church and be, and this is not an instead of going to church, because City Hall is not even open on the owner's office isn't even open on a Sunday. But if you can go to church, if you can have someone record and you can post it on a campaign page. For people to see, and I, in my opinion, if you post something on a campaign page, you post it to campaign. Then you can also come to you could also come to work as well. Now let me caveat that by saying, I don't know how the oxygen tank works. I don't know what the advice is from his medical doctor, one way or the other. But I do think it kind of rubbed some people the wrong way when you saw the video on a campaign page. But at the same time, you know, I don't think that, you know, I think that people should be able to worship at their own leisure and however they see fit. But I will also say that we're also twisting Josh Daniels' words to say that he was going after his faith in any way. I mean, Josh Daniels wasn't criticizing Robert Landon the Christian, Robert Landon's faith in any way, shape, or form. He was just saying that he felt that Robert Landon should be back at work. It wasn't, there was no derogatory mark towards his faith.
A statement was issued to Crawford County Now. Now, this came late in the week last week as well. I believe it was Wednesday or Thursday. This is from Josh Daniels. It's a quote. He's jerking on the heartstrings of the community for all it's worth. There's a special place in hell for the Pharisees and this guy. If that oxygen tank can go to church, it can come to the office. I hope the community does not continue to fall for it. Josh Daniels said this to Crawford County Now. Now, was this before or after the press release? Because there's a little confusion there.
I wouldn't know, to be honest with you, with the press release, I think. Yeah, you know, I don't know. I don't want to speculate one way or the other. My gut kind of, well, I guess my gut kind of tells me that the Crawford County Now post came after the press release, but I could be wrong about that.
I think it did as well. Yeah. So the comment he's talking about is not this comment, right?
No, I don't think so. But I mean, look, Josh, what Josh said is something that I wouldn't say. It's just two different styles of the way people are one way or the other. I do find merit in the claim that there is a bit of heartstring pulling one way or the other, and there is a bit of every single time someone messes up, or every time single time he messes up, that it's a poor me, I'm the victim, everyone's going after me, but at the same time, everyone's going after me, but it's actually not my fault, and it's actually all these other people's fault who can't happen to not be able to be at the meeting, or, you know, someone that would never be able to be at the meeting, or someone's hacking my computer, or someone's doing some crazy stuff. And so I do think that there is merit to the idea that, you know, there is a bit of emotional manipulation going on to take that post. And I think that even if you just post it on your personal page, that's fine one way or the other. But when you post it on, like, a campaign page, when you post it on your political page, you're doing it for political reasons. I mean, it's not a stretch to say, you know, things we post on our political page are for political reasons, or are for, I mean, maybe, I guess some of them are for informational pages, because, listen, when I brought Nolan home, my kid, I posted on my campaign page too, and I did it in reference to say, look, you know, this is one of the many things that I said was going to happen in the first 2 years of my term. It's going to give me a good idea as to how, it gives me a new look as to how to serve the community, not only as a young person, but also as a father. So, you know, I to a certain degree, I understand why it happened, but at the same time, once you post that on your political page, I think it enters the political realm, and if someone says, hey, you know, you're really just playing with heartstrings, if you're really just trying to get an emotional reaction, or you're really just trying to get somebody to say, well, yeah, you know, he's messed up on this, or he's messed up on that, but listen to him in church. Like, then I think that it does get frustrating, especially for some of the more senior members of council who are sitting there saying, like, I think that for a lot of members of council and for a lot of people who work in the city, it's blatantly obvious. But if you're a voter that only sees Marion Starr articles and only sees contradicting opinions constantly, so the he said, a battle of words, he said, she said, then you don't know what to believe. But at the same time, that is intentional. That is an attempt by one side to make the situation so confusing for people that they just chalk it up to politics.
Well, this kept on rolling last week, and on Friday morning, Josh Daniels appeared on this show, City Councilman at Large, and said that Robert Landon, the city auditor, had made a police report with the Marion City Police Department that he had stolen his mail. Is basically what that's what the article in the Star is about today, that he had stolen his mail, that the Marion City Police Department had called Josh, I think is what he said, they had called him, and Josh made it clear on this show that if that was an intimidation against him, one public official to another, by calling the office, because Josh says he didn't steal his mail, that he went in and asked for it from Martin Watts, and Martin Watts gave it to him. It was a bill that was not paid to a contractor.
Yeah, and the chief of police actually spoke up at the meeting and said, you know, to be honest with you, there was no mail to steal.
The chief of police now has said, as of last night, Jay McDonald,
yes, he said
that there's no mail to steal.
There's no mail to steal, and that the finance chair could just, they wouldn't be stealing. It's the job of the finance chair to come and get it, and not only that, but in regards to the investigation, it came back as got filed as an unfounded claim, and then it's our understanding from Jay McDonald that now there are statements being made by Robert that the investigator was not taking his job seriously or was not was questioning the ability of the investigator to do his job. Our investigators do a fantastic job. Our police do a great job one way or the other. We can't go, I think we cannot start to become critical of unelected people just because we don't get the result we want.
So in your opinion, was this, there's no mail to steal, Josh would have access to any of this information anyway as the chair of the finance committee, was this done as an attempt to intimidate another city official?
Yeah, I think, I'm not a lawyer, but I think that it was done kind of as a circus act, as an attempt to kind of change the dialogue, confuse, because Chief McDonald even said, you know, we have emails between the deputy auditor and the who they pay the bill to, that, you know, say that they know that they pay it by email, so they know that it's not something that comes in the mail, so they knew when they filed the report that there was no mail to steal, but they filed it anyway, taking up valuable police resources and valuable police time.
The problem here is, if it was done for that purpose to intimidate, and we now know it was apparently unfounded, according to Chief McDonald, that this is illegal. You cannot do this. And Josh made it very clear that if he found that out, that he would be dealing with Mr. Landon in a legal way. I think his term on Friday was, they'll be going to Columbus.
Yeah, and I think, you know, if it comes, but if Josh gets legal advice that says, you know, that is intimidation, then he should pursue it. We can't have a political realm in which, you know, people are threatened, people are have police reports filed against them.
Do you think he was threatened? As an opinion of a person who now has heard the whole story and heard what the police chief has had to say, what do you chalk it up to?
I think he did it just as a way to take a shot at Josh, just so that people would cover it and say, you know, police report filed against city councilmen just for the bad optics, just for the, just to kind of get in the mud a little bit. And I think that there was no intent to actually, there was no, they never thought that there was actually mail stolen.
Is that intimidation? That we want to make you look bad?
I mean, I think it is. I think it's just your, it's retaliation, in my opinion, for trying to hold somebody accountable one way or the other. And that, to me, is, I think in Marion, a lot of people are aware of this idea that there's a good old boys club, that you know, some people just never get held accountable one way or the other. And since I've been coming on since 2019, I've said, you know, people really don't know my last, didn't know my last name. I kind of popped up out of nowhere. I'd done stuff in the community, but it wasn't, it wasn't a good old boy situation. And so I don't care if you're a Republican or a Democrat. If there's a good old boy situation, I will always try to break that up and always try to hold those people accountable. And I think that Josh saw a situation where something wasn't being done correctly, and there was kind of an attempt to protect the good old boys.
The final question here, because the time has blown by, trying to figure this all out. But in the end, the finances are one thing, and the finances are going to be what the finances are going to be. But is it okay for the city auditor to release a statement that apparently is untrue? Is it okay for the city auditor to go to the newspaper and make statements that are untrue? Is it okay for the city auditor to call and file a police report on the chair of the finance committee on city council that now we know is unfounded, per Police Chief Jay McDonald? Forget the finances of the city. That's 1 week of activity. Is that okay? Can we just keep on trucking?
I don't think it's okay, and I think that, you know, it kind of shows, you know, where our priorities lie. And, you know, if we have the time to do all this, why wouldn't we have the time to be more active in the city's bookmaking and things like that? And as well as to say, you know, is his goal really right now to put forward good books, or is his goal to win the optics battle? Or to leave people so confused that they can't say, you know, well, yeah, he messed up or not, or to say, you know, he's doing good or he's doing poorly. It just becomes such a cluster of attempts to confuse, attempts to put out mistruths.
Well, you have said on this show, the last time you were on, I believe you had said, maybe 2 times ago, that you believed he should resign. So we were at that point. Mm-hmm. We got there. Now, how do you describe the city auditor, Robert Landon, after everything that happened last week?
Political. I mean, it's...
Is he an honest man? If I go to him and I ask him a question, am I going to get an honest answer?
I think it depends on it depends on the optics. I think that that's really what it always comes down to. I think that there's always an attempt to protect optics and to make sure that the politics are good for him. And look, you know, elected officials, all of us, you know, want good optics. All of us, you know, have our election chances in mind whenever we do things one way or the other. So it's not to say that Robert is just this. You know, no one else ever considers politics one way or the other. But it feels like at some point you have to stop campaigning. At some point you have to stop trying to position yourself for other office. At some point you have to take a job that's a very technical job that requires a specific set of expertise and do that job. If you, instead of putting out press releases about this, press releases about that, I mean, how much of this could have been avoided if a meeting was just set up between the finance chair back in, say, February, and the auditor, along with maybe the state, one way or the other. But instead, there's such a hostile, I think, work environment that everything is cutthroat. Everything is, you know, it's a, if you're not, you know, with me constantly, no matter what happens, then you're 100% against me. To be honest with you, I have no intent to ever run for auditor one way or the other. I just want my darn ARPA bill to pass.
Well, we've only got 15 seconds left here. If Josh Daniels does file a a claim against Robert Landon or for this police action, can counsel just let that go? Can that just be, okay, here's another thing, let's see how it turns out?
You know, I think that that's a decision for counsel as a collective, and then also with the advice of the city law director at the end of the day. I think that too many times in local politics, we all put on different expert hats that, you know, we're not actually experts at. So I'm going to leave this up to the people with that have passed the bar exam.
Well, First Ward City Councilman Kai Mead, give us updates on that ARPA bill. That'll be interesting. And, of course, as things continue to go on, the mayor, I believe in his first exclusive interview, since this whole thing has erupted in the last week, coming up in about 10 minutes. So stay tuned. Thanks, Kai.
Thanks for having me.
Warm friends, sweet. May the tricks that you are asked to do be a trick to help you gain a friend or two. So bye to